Medical Breakthroughs, the research journey. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Caroline Burden, and you're about to join me on a journey into the fascinating world of medical breakthroughs. But not just any breakthroughs. We're diving into the personal stories, the setbacks, the you will not believe this moments behind the cutting edge research happening right here at Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. Coming up in this episode.
What we're finding is that people's walking improved during the time that they're wearing the headsets, and then for a variable period afterwards. So they might be able to then dip to the shop independently and back again in that period of time. We're very keen to look into this more with further research.
This is an extraordinary gadget that involves augmented reality, helping patients with Parkinson's. I'm joined by Professor Rory O'Connor and Caroline Gill. Caroline Gill is a research physiotherapist, and Rory is a Charterhouse Professor of Rehabilitation Medicine and the head of the Academic Department of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Leeds. He's also the Deputy Director of the Leeds Institute of Rheumatic and Musculoskeletal Medicine.
So Parkinson's is a condition that affects the brain. It affects about 145,000 people in the UK today. So that's about 2,000 people in the city of Leeds. It tends to affect older people in general, although it can start in children. And many of the people who've been involved in our research are younger people, people of working age who are living with Parkinson's. It predominantly affects people's mobility, meaning that their walking freezes when they're trying to take a step, but it can also affect their balance, it can cause falls, and ultimately, for a small number of people, it can actually result in a type of condition.
When you talk about the body freezing in terms of mobility when somebody tries to take a step, what actually happens to that person as they are trying to carry on and do just, you know, one foot in front of the other? What is going on?
When people take a step and they're walking, they get into a flow, they're walking quite happily. What often can happen with people with Parkinson's, they might have a sudden obstacle placed in front of them. They might come across a chair, they might come across a doorway. And for some reason, that interrupts that flow and they suddenly stop, which is obviously very frustrating for that person. And it can take a little bit of time, seconds, hopefully, usually, for them to get going again. And they might need a little bit of help to do that, to get over that freezing episode and start walking again. They have that intention to move, they want to move, but for some reason, those messages aren't getting to their legs and they feel frozen, hence the term freezing when they're walking. Incredibly frustrating for that person, that individual.
And is it progressive?
The condition of Parkinson's is progressive condition, yes it is.
And so presumably then those moments of freezing will get worse and worse?
It don't happen to everyone with Parkinson's, but it is a common feature of Parkinson's. And they do get more and more frequent. And that's what we've seen in people with Parkinson's. Those episodes do get more frequent.
For some people, it will progress. And there are people who will end up not being able to walk at all. And sometimes not even be able to sit out of bed. So it's really, really important that people keep mobile and stay mobile.
And presumably then, in your role, Caroline, that must be a real challenge to get people moving when, for whatever reason, there's that disconnect between the brain and the body.
I think with people who are at that point, that is very challenging indeed. What I found while working with people with Parkinson's is that the people that I've met have a desire to move. They want to keep moving and they want to try. Unfortunately, some people, the lack of motivation is part of the condition. So we need to see people as soon as they're diagnosed with Parkinson's to give that advice and that education about movement and about exercise and keeping moving. There is a number of studies that have been done that are now showing that exercise is one of the best things that you can do for Parkinson's and to maintain the mobility that you have, and in some cases improve the mobility that you have. And that is something that I feel very proud to be a part of as a physiotherapist, somebody that's involved in movement and exercise and keeping people moving. There are challenges, as you just to allude to what you're saying, but largely when people come to see me, they have that motivation and they want to do work, as it were, and they want to help themselves.
So tell me a little bit then about this body of research that has been happening at Leeds.
We've been doing what's called a feasibility study, or as I have been explaining it, putting the feelers out, seeing how people feel about using these augmented reality headsets. It's come about from a company called Stroll, with three L's, and they have developed software to specifically with people with Parkinson's in mind in the initial setup, particularly for people who have that freezing when they're walking. We've been doing a study on a group of people with Parkinson's, looking at if they are able to use these headsets at home, giving them a number of exercises to do in their own home, and seeing how they feel about it and if it's making a difference to their walking, which at the moment we've just finished the data collection, and what we're finding, it is actually making a difference in their walking, which is very pleasing for us.
So Rory, tell me a little bit about Stroll and the relationship with them.
Sure. Well, Leeds has the longest established rehabilitation research program in the UK. And as a rehabilitation research centre, we were set up in 1974 by my predecessor, Professor Anne Chamberlain, OBE. And what she wanted to do was to move away from the traditional medical research model where people were given medications in order to see if that would help the condition that they were living with. And as Caroline has rightly said, there is no treatment for Parkinson's that stops it getting worse or that even reverses it other than exercise. So all of the medications and the drugs, which unfortunately 99% of the research into Parkinson's has looked at, have no effect whatsoever on stopping the Parkinson's getting worse. They help you with the symptoms, and they might make you feel a bit better temporarily, but actually it's not tackling the underlying problem in your brain. So when I first heard about this technology which was being developed, I thought, well, we're the perfect group here in Leeds to be able to research this. We unfortunately have lots of people living with Parkinson's in the city, but we also have the facilities and the setup to be able to do the research here to prove that it works. And we've been asking people to come to Chapel Anderson Hospital, where we have our rehabilitation centre, and Caroline's been meeting people downstairs in our therapy outpatient facility, providing them with the training and the equipment, and then supervising their work at home over 6 weeks at a time.
Now, you talk about the equipment and the headset. It feels very space age. Talk us through what the headset is, what it does, and the sort of the thought process behind it.
Sure. So the founder of Stroll is a man whose father has Parkinson's. He's very much involved in filming and visual arts. And he went with his dad one day to a physiotherapy session where they provided him with what is currently the gold standard for exercise in Parkinson's, which is a technique called cueing. And that was done in the gym and his dad got better. But on the way home, Tom felt that there must be a better way of providing that, but also providing more of it, because we know about all exercise and all rehabilitation, the greater the dose of rehabilitation you can give someone, the better they become and the longer the effects are.
So what is cueing?
So cueing is giving people precisely that, a cue to be able to do something. So the freezing that Caroline mentioned earlier can be overcome if, when somebody freezes, we provide them with a cue. And the common example that we use when someone's walking is affected by Parkinson's. If someone walks beside them and just whispers in their ear, big steps, that then allows that person to walk in a much more natural way and avoids the freezing.
That's fascinating. That makes a difference and sort of jolts the brain and the body to sort of work better together. So what does it look like then when you put a headset on? What can the patient see?
So the headsets, they're called glasses, headsets. They sort of fit on your head a little bit like a bike helmet, but without the top part completely. And they have glasses in front of your face, basically covering your eyes. And with augmented reality, you can still see the world around you, the real world around you, with computer images overlaid on top of it. So you may see in some of the games that we have what are again called hot buttons. So you'll see big round buttons in front of you in a grid. You'll see one of the more fun games, you might say, there will be little mole hills on the floor and little moles will pop out and they act as the cue for you to walk towards the moles. They're quite bright visually, lovely colours. They're very fresh and clean images. The technology has come on a long way, even in the 2 years that we've been working on the study. The difference between augmented reality and virtual reality is that with virtual reality, you're kind of immersed in this computer-generated world, as opposed to augmented reality, where you still can't see the world around you. People who've tried both, they say that augmented reality, you feel a bit more grounded. You're less likely to feel nauseated, you know, that travel sickness kind of feeling, vertigo kind of feelings. That's less likely to happen with augmented reality, which is a bonus for us. But all the games are geared around what Rory was saying about providing a cue. So there are visual things on the floor or in front of you to reach towards or walk towards to give that brain that prompt to take a step forward or reach. The other thing that it does is it provides audible cues as well, so you can hear noises as well related to the game and in action.
And so is the idea behind it that they would be used as almost at-home physio sessions, or is it that you could, you know, if you're trying to walk to the shops, you could put it on and it would help you with your cues to walk in real time? What's the idea?
At present, the headsets are definitely used as games. They're used as physiotherapy-based games. Physiotherapists have helped design the games. They're very much based on traditional type of physiotherapy games. And they are to be used in conjunction with or in place of physiotherapy. The games are dynamic. They can be changed. The levels can be changed, so you can get more of almost like a fitness workout. Get your heart and lungs working a bit harder, and that is one of the massive benefits of using the headsets. The idea is also there are apps available that Stroll are developing to provide things that a physiotherapist or an occupational therapist might provide in a therapy session. So placing lines on the floor, we might traditionally place tape or walking sticks or something in a series in front of a person to give them something to step over, and that gives that visual cue. So the headsets can provide that, but in a augmented reality way. So you can see lines on the floor provided through the headsets. At present, it's not possible to use it for walking outdoors to the shops, but that is absolutely the hope. That's what we're aiming for, so people can get out and do their normal activities, things that they may have been afraid to do or a bit wary of doing because they may be worried about having a freezing episode. And giving them a headset that they can wear wherever they're going and give them that freedom and that independence to move again in their normal activities.
And do you get any data at the time, you know, from when patients are at home playing one of the games to do that sort of rehab? Do you get any information on how that's gone or how successful that's been?
We do. So I can log into a remote program from wherever I'm working, and I can see if the people who've been given headsets, if they have been participating in the games. I make them fully aware of this, so they know if they've been doing their exercises, and let them know that this is important for us for the study and important for us to see how they're getting on. So yes, we do. We get a lot of information from the games. We know when they've played them, how long they've played them for. With their games, we also get their scores. So for example, there's a basketball game and I know how many baskets they've scored. And this obviously means that I can see if they're improving as well. With the study, I'll have a weekly telephone call with participants, and we chat about whether the games are at the good level for them. So they might say, oh, I'm doing quite well with the games. I feel like everything's going nicely. And we can discuss whether to increase the difficulty of the games to make it a little bit more challenging for them, and the length of time that they're playing them for as well. So I can do all of that remotely and change all of that from wherever I'm working.
Now, I watched a video of a gentleman using one of the headsets where when he put the headset on, he could see the room in front of him and there were the lines on the floor. Now, before he put the headset on, it was clear that he was struggling to walk. He was struggling to lift his feet up. There was an element of sort of shuffling. And then he put the headset on and it was almost like watching a different person. It looked like magic that somebody can have such a big difference with what seemingly is a small intervention. How does it work when the headset comes off? Are there any lasting effects from having, you know, done that, having used it?
The video that you saw was truly remarkable. The person that was videoed was such a wonderful change to see in their walking. What we're finding is, and from what people are telling us, is that people's walking are improved during the time that they're wearing the headsets, and then for a variable period afterwards, and that could be 10 minutes to an hour. At the moment, we haven't officially measured it, so we're not entirely sure, but we call that a carryover. So the carryover from wearing the headset, we know that there is some, but we're not sure how long for, and that might vary person to person. The implications of that, though, so what that might mean is that somebody might play the games on the headsets for 10 or 15 minutes. They might have then a carryover or an improvement in their walking for a certain period of time after, which then allows them to go and do a normal activity in that period afterwards. So they might be able to then nip to the shop independently and back again in that period of time. We're very keen to look into this. This is something that as a facility and stroll and people with Parkinson's are very keen to look into that and explore research.
It sounds hugely transformative.
Well, it is. And rehabilitation has always relied on that carryover effect, irrespective of whatever condition it is that we're trying to treat. And the fact that we can now provide people with a lot more rehabilitation in an environment that they're familiar with in their own home at a time that suits them, so they're not tied to our timetables and our schedules here within the NHS. It just opens up huge new possibilities, obviously for people with Parkinson's, because that's the group of people that we're working with at the moment, but we could easily see how this technology could be used for someone who's recovering from a stroke, from a brain injury, from cancer, from something affecting your spine, from multiple sclerosis. There are many, many conditions which have a huge amount of potential to benefit from this.
And with the trial itself, what's the process now between, you know, there are a select number of people who are able to be on this trial. What's the process between this and it getting a green light and potentially being a standard form of therapy?
So at the moment, we're going through the process of what's called getting ethical permission to go ahead and invite more people to take part in a much bigger study. We're hoping to be able to start that within the next few months. And we'll be inviting up to 50 people in Leeds to take part in the project. And there are three other NHS hospitals in England who'll be partnering with us on that. And we'll be leading it. And what we hope is that this trial will show that it's beneficial to the people involved. But we're also collecting information on how expensive it is to be able to use this technology. I'm hoping that it will be less expensive and better for people than the current systems that we're using and the treatments which are on offer. And then we'll be able to put together a proposal, and we'll go to an organization called NICE, and they're the people that approve medications and technologies for use within the NHS. And from that, then, other hospitals around the UK will be able to buy and use this technology for people living within their own regions.
Wow. I mean, the difference that this could have, as you say, is it could branch out to different patients suffering with different things, could be huge. We hear a lot at the moment about, you know, waiting times and queues for GPs, and there's, you know, there can be a bit of a feeling of, oh, it's all doom and gloom. And then you hear work like this that's going on, and it makes you feel really positive about what the future can look like.
It is really positive. And I think this allows people to take control of their own health and recovery as well. This allows you to do your rehabilitation at a time in a space that suits you. And at the same time, it also frees up, you know, experts like Caroline to do the more sophisticated, complicated face-to-face activities that need to be done. And maybe some of the more routine, more straightforward rehabilitation can be delivered in this way. So,
especially if you begin to think about things that are just on the market now. You know, we have lots of virtual reality headsets, and you hear about, you know, the Google glasses and all the rest of them. And you think, well, actually, if this could over time transform into something like that, potentially it could be something that somebody just buys from the shop.
Potentially. I mean, we're really lucky in that we get the augmented reality headsets that aren't available to buy yet. We and the people who'll be joining us in the study in the next few months, we'll get a sneak preview of what augmented reality is actually going to look like in 2-3 years' time. And there's no reason why people shouldn't be able to access this in a freer way. You know, people can take out a gym subscription, people can watch Joe Wicks on television. This is just another way of helping yourself to stay well and healthy.
I think we're obviously feeling very positive about it. We have some results that have come in, and it's showing incredible results in terms of improvements in walking. But I think what's also important to say is that we also have been gathering a bit of feedback from the people who have been using the glasses. And some of the things that are coming out are that the glasses are enjoyable to use, that they're interesting, they're different to the traditional physiotherapy exercises. It's very encouraging. You get the feedback from the games, which is very motivating. They're obviously, it hasn't all been a bed of roses. It's been a process. But those themes really stand out, and they've been really powering us forward to continue with this, because people have been enjoying using it, and it's a motivating factor for people to get moving, which we know helps.
Yeah, and makes, you know, such a difference as well. And it's so good that element has been thought about. It doesn't sound to me like it's just, in inverted commas, just practical. You know, it has the other positive benefits as well.
The fun factor.
Yeah.
And if you want to find out any more details, you can find more information in our show notes. Coming up on our next episode.
Women in certain cultures, they may not feel empowered to ask a man to donate a kidney. We see commonly in a woman who's not economically active, who's uneducated, they don't feel empowered to ask a kidney from somebody who's working and economically active. We also see parents in certain cultures not comfortable asking their children.
And we'll hear more from Dr. Darga in our next episode. He's a consultant nephrologist and transplant physician at Leeds Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. And he's working on a research project that looks into why some people choose not to have kidney transplants, even though it might be the best option for them. Medical Breakthroughs: The Research Journey is an Under the Mast audio production.